we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy some vintage detective work with San Francisco's own Sam Spade Detective. But first, on the lighter side, it's Fibber McGee and Molly. Fibber McGee and Molly was the story of Jim and Marion Jordan, one of childhood sweethearts, making it big in Hollywood. They got their start in radio in 1924 when Jim and Marion breezed into WIBO and were hired as the O'Henry twins at $10 a week. By April of 1935, their program went to NBC Blue as Fibber McGee and Molly for Johnson's Wax. In April of 41, Fibber McGee and Molly topped Jack Benny and Bob Hope to lead all the radio shows in the ratings wars. Fibber McGee and Molly was dropped as a weekly half-hour feature after the show of June 30th, 1953. It returned in October of that same year as a five-day-a-week, 15-minute program, which continued until 1957. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Fibber McGee and Molly in Getting Ready for the Cattle Ranch from June of 1945. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax for Home and Industry presents Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Well, there are big plans being made at 79 Wistful Vista this week. There are plans afoot to be on horseback, because the squire and his lady are going to work on a ranch this summer, out in the Great West, where if you give a crook enough rope, you will be minus a cow. And here at home, discussing the near future, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Wonder if ranching isn't going to be rather hard work for you, dearie. That cowboy stuff is pretty strenuous, you know.
Oh, not for me. I know my way around a corral like the back of my hand. Remember, I worked on Uncle Sycamore's ranch out in Montana for years.
Your Uncle Sycamore?
Sure, you remember me telling about Uncle Sycamore, one of the great cattlemen of the Old West.
Oh, dear.
Rancher, gunman, horse thief, rustler, and marshal. A low character in high heels.
Yeah, a half-pint brain in a 10-gallon hat. Whatever happened to Uncle Sycamore?
Well, it was quite a tragedy. He was head man at a public function, and the platform gave way under him. Unfortunately, he had a rope round his neck at the time, and it killed him.
Very romantic. I never knew he had a ranch of his own, though.
Oh, sure he did. He called it the Running W Bar J Spitwire Rocking Chair Diamond Star 2 Hash Knife X.
How did he ever get all that brand on one cow?
Well, the idea was that any critter he found running loose on the range, he could make the brand fit his one way or the other. Yeah, started with one steer and worked it up to the biggest herd in Montana.
I begin to see why that platform gave way. Mm-hmm. The old coyote was sure full of larceny, weren't he, partner?
Yeah, sure was, gal, and proud of it. Had three sons and named them all Russell. Old Sycamore had him quite a ranch. Runs from the top of Montana down to the Mexican border.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Clear across Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico?
My gosh, are all those states in between?
Why, sure.
I thought it seemed an awful long ride back to the bunkhouse.
Bunkhouse is right. McGee, you know, you have a terrible habit of exaggerating things.
Yes, I suppose I have. But there's so little water out there, you develop a kind of a dry sense of humor.
Ought to be a joke there about a cowboy getting off his horse just to see the reins drop, but I can't make nothing of it, partner.
Don't try, gal.
Ever tell you about a couple of fresh water springs Uncle Sycamore had in his summer pasture that were so cold the water come up in the form of icicles?
No.
Sticking 20 or 30 feet in the air?
Really?
Yeah. Cows would take a run at them, break them off, and kick them around in the sun till they melted.
McGee, now look, you must learn not to stretch the truth so far.
Well, my gosh, you don't want me to be dull, do you? Gee whiz, the guy's got to get a little color into his conversation.
Yeah, but you overdo it, dearie.
Well, I can't help it, Molly.
Oh, yes, you can.
Honest, I can.
Well, then I'll help you.
Hmm?
Every time you start going haywire with the facts, I'll pinch you or kick you in the shin.
Oh, go on, you can't kick that high.
I said shin.
Oh.
So now you watch yourself after this. I don't mind a little amusing story now and then, but when you really start exaggerating like...
Oh, hi, Alice.
Hi, Mr. McGee. Hi, Mrs. McGee. Have you decided what you're going to do this summer?
Yes, we're going out on a ranch out west, Alice.
It's a kind of a combination ranch and farm, Alice. I'm an expert both ways.
Oh, really, are you?
Oh, sure, I'm an expert.
Hmm.
Why, when I was only 13, I was raising prize-winning watermelons. Used to raise melons that were 10 and 12 feet long. Ouch. 2 inches thick. Used to slice them like cucumbers.
Did you kick him, Mrs. McGee?
Yes, I did, Alice. We have an agreement now. Every time he starts to exaggerate too much, I'm to snap him out of it.
Oh.
So don't pay any attention to him.
Don't you worry about it, Alice. I'm the guy with the broken leg.
But, criminy, what do you know about ranching, Mr. McGee?
Worked for several years on my Uncle Sycamore's ranch in Montana, Alice. He paid me 50 a month and found.
What does "and found" mean?
Well, that means he paid McGee 50 a month and found he wasn't worth it. See, by the way, Alice, there was a phone call for you. I think it was Paul Weston.
Who, him?
He wants you to call him.
Oh, well, thanks, honey, but I don't think I will. He just wants a date, and I don't think a girl should date a man just to curry favor with him just because he's her foreman at the airplane plant, should I?
That's a very sensible attitude, Alice. Mm.
Besides, I have a date tonight with the president of the company son anyway. Well, I'll see you before you go.
Yeah, okay, Alice.
Reminds me, McGee, I better go find the trunk keys.
Huh?
You better start sorting out the clothes you want to take so we'll be ready.
Okay. Ah, there goes a good kid. And she's going to love the old West, sitting on the porch of the old ranch house, watching the glory of the dying sun over the snow-capped mountains, waiting for me to come home from the roundup on account of she can't get her boots off by herself. Yes, sir, she's... Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi there, little girl. Turn your horse over to one of the hands and lie it down for a spell.
Well,
I'm just getting in the mood for this summer, Teeny. Mrs. McGee and I are going out and work on a cattle ranch.
Hey, mister.
Huh? What's the matter?
Why isn't Miss McGee ever here when I come in? Why isn't she? Why?
Well, I don't know, sis. Just a coincidence, I guess.
Oh? Doesn't she like little children? Doesn't she?
Why, sure she does, sis. She loves kids. I'll tell her you were asking about her.
Okay. Hey, you know what, mister?
Know what, Teeny?
School's out.
It is?
Hmm?
I says it is.
It is what?
School's out.
She is, or did you pass?
Sure I did. I got A in everything. I'm not talking about my school. I mean yours.
Oh?
How'd you do this year?
Well, swell, I betcha.
Mm-hmm.
I got A's and B's and everything but deportment.
Mm.
I flanked in deportment.
You don't mean flanked, Teeny. You mean flunked.
Why?
Huh?
Hmm?
I says you don't mean flanked. You mean flunked. When you flank something, it means you go around the end of it.
I know it.
Mm-hmm.
I always went around the end of the third row and sock Willie Toops with an eraser. That's why I flanked deportment.
I don't think that was very nice. What was the idea of flunking Willie?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I was just burned up, mister.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah?
Burned up.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. He carried Sarah Marshall's books home twice last week, and he's my boyfriend.
Oh, now, wait a minute. It's silly to be jealous at your age.
It is?
Sure.
How old do you have to be?
Oh, 16 or so.
Well, if you think I'm going to let that little two-timer get away with that stuff for 9 years before I smack him down.
Lay off. Don't take things so serious. Was deportment the only thing you flunked in?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't very good in arithmetic, though, either. Mm-hmm. My teacher says if my daddy doesn't stop doing my homework, I'll never reach the eighth grade, I'll bet you.
Yes, I can understand that.
Hmm?
I says that's quite apparent.
I'll say yes. The best one a girl ever had.
Oh,
well, I'll see you in October, mister.
Billy Mills and the orchestra play I Get a Kick Out of You.
Out that you want to take with you, dearie?
No, but I still got a couple of days. I travel light anyway. All I need on a ranch is a pair of Levi's and a hickory shirt. Get me some boots when I get there and a sombrero.
A what?
Sombrero, one of them big hats. I had one out in Wyoming once that was 6 feet across the brim.
Ouch!
Had a 1-inch crown. Silliest looking hat you ever saw.
You see how I'm helping you, dearie?
Yeah.
Before we made this little arrangement, that hat would have been 20 feet across and 9 feet high.
Well, As a matter of fact, I did have one hat that was...
Probably saving another contusion.
Wouldn't be surprised. Come in.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Wellington.
Ah, there, Mrs. McGee. Permit me to kiss your hand. Thank you. And McGee, the back of my hand to you.
Easy there, stranger. You can't talk that away to me. I riles easy, and when I riles, I comes in a shooting. Now move on, son. We don't cotton to nesters in this valley. We aim to keep it decent for our women folk.
I say, old man, what is the meaning of this digression into the blustering blab of the buckskin brothel?
Well, he's practicing, Mr. Wellington.
Oh?
We're going out on a ranch this summer.
Going to resume my old career at a cowhand, Wellington. Might do a little prospecting on the side, too.
Ah, an old desert rat. Or, in this case, leave us say, mouse.
I didn't know you'd plan on doing some prospecting, McGee.
I guess I never mentioned the fact that I discovered and developed the old Gopher Hole gold mine in western Utah. Well, sir, I'd been riding along looking for mavericks.
What's a maverick?
My gosh, don't you know what a maverick is?
No.
Nor I, McGee. What is a maverick?
Well, it's a kind of a... Well, let's keep it simple. I was looking for four-leaf clovers. All of a sudden, my horse stumbled in the Gopher Hole and flanged me over his head. But me being an old horseman, I always fell relaxed. In fact, I was so relaxed that by the time I hit the ground, I was sound asleep.
Oh.
And when I woke up, I had a gold nugget in my hand.
Probably an old filling.
That was the discovery of the Gopher Hole gold mine.
Well, was it of any value, old fellow?
Value? Mm-hmm. Why, in 3 years, we took out more than 17 million... 17 million rattlesnakes and not a grain of gold. Worst mining fluke ever recorded. Well, what can we do for you, Wellington?
Nothing, my friend. I just dropped in to wish you a pleasant summer. And I hope it will be most enjoyable.
Bull?
Not at all. I mean that seriously.
I certainly like him, McGee. Who else would drop in just to wish us a nice summer?
I wouldn't believe anything that guy says. Remember when the city hall burned down and they were using the back of his theater for a jail?
No, what about it?
He put up that great big sign that says, Cooler Inside. That guy from that time on to this. Poor kid is utterly confused. Utterly.
Well, he'll have all summer to calm down.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I'm surprised he doesn't go out west. He used to be quite a polo player and horseman.
Well, he gave up polo for croquet. Same game, but slower, and you got no feed bill.
Say, we won't have much of a feed bill ourselves if we get our room and meals this summer.
No, that's one of the... Hey, how about Beulah?
What about Beulah?
Has she got a job for the summer?
Well, I'm sure she has. Anybody that can cook like she can won't have to stand in line for a job. But let's ask her.
Yeah.
Oh, Beulah? Beulah?
Beulah, all present off counter for ma'am.
Hey, Beulah, we were just wondering what your plans were for the summer.
Oh, I'm just going to stay home and cook for Papa. Yeah, you see, we got a family arrangement.
Uh-huh.
Every summer, one of us gals stay home and cook for Papa. It's my turn this year.
Oh. How many sisters have you, Beulah?
9, ma'am. Think of seeing Papa again after all these years.
Too bad you're staying home, Beulah. You could pick up a pretty fancy hunk of folding money the way you handle that ever-loving oven.
Oh, yes, sir. I know. I could have gone to work for Mr. Toops again this summer, but the situation wasn't any too copacetic.
What do you mean, Beulah?
Well, Mr. Toops, he's really a nice man. He said he got a yen for some of my cooking.
Well, what's the matter with that?
Well, sir, I look up yen in the dictionary, and it say yen is Japanese money, and who want to get paid off in that stuff? Old Star Spangled Mazuma, good enough for Beulah.
Well, we'll miss your cooking ourselves, Beulah, out there on that ranch.
On a ranch, Beulah. We're going to work on a ranch this summer, you know, with the yippee-tie-yo and the bang, bang, bang.
Well, for goodness sake. You mean you climb up on all on that big saddle with a big bump on the front of them?
That's a horn, Beulah.
Says the who, ma'am?
That thing on the front of a Western saddle is a horn, Beulah.
Yeah. Well, I always hear about them rootin' tootin' old cowboys, but I never know before what they was tootin'. I thought you'd been saying, yeah, this summer go fishing out of Dew's Lake, sir.
Well, his boat is sunk, Beulah, and anyway, he wants to be more useful than that.
Oh, I could raise that boat for that matter. Just a matter of patching it up a little. My gosh, you know what I paid for that skiff in the first place? I paid $4,000. Cigar coupons. Thanks, Molly.
You're welcome.
What's going on here with people kicking people?
Just an arrangement we have, Beulah. Mr. McGee is learning not to exaggerate so much.
Yeah. Loan me a pair of shin guards sometime, Beulah, and I'll really tell you a yarn.
Okay, sir. And I guess them little fish in Lake Dugan can wait till you get back.
Well, they've been waiting 15 years. I don't know what difference another summer will make.
Yep, I'll go out this fall if you'll make some donuts for bait, Beulah.
Excuse me?
Whoever heard of using donuts for bait, dear?
No, just something I want to try sometime. See if those fish will go for it. Hook, line, and sinker.
No. Oh. Didn't a man say hook, line, and sinker? Love that man. Yeah.
The King's Men sing Swingin' on a Star.
Listen, my children, hear ye. If you want to be carefree, aim your wagon high. There's no limit to the sky. Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be lots better off than you are. Or would you like to be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. He kicks up at anything he hears. His back is brawny and his brain is bleak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak. And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule. Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be lots better off than you are. Or would you like to be a fish? A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book. To fool up people is his only thought. And though he's slippery, he still gets caught. But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you may grow up to be a fish. Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be lots better off than you are. Or would you rather be a goat? A goat is a silly one. Eats a lunch of tin. Whiskers on his chin. Always butting in. Monkeys too might appeal to you. If you like living in a tree, they've nothing to say but to chatter all day. That's no way to be. And all the monkeys aren't in the zoo. Every day you meet quite a few. So you see, it's all up to you. You can be better than a monkey or a fish, a goat or a mule or whatever you wish. You could be swinging on a star.
You know, I can hardly wait to get out on that ranch, Molly. Leaping into the saddle at the crack of dawn, chasing them longhorns across the range.
Say, don't those longhorn steers frighten you, little McGee?
Nah, your horse always knows what to do. Hey, I got a book upstairs that tells all about roping and riding. I'll go get it and you can read all about it.
Okay. Ah, there goes a good kid. He thinks I'll be nervous out among all those cows and horses and don't think he won't be right. If one of those bulls ever moves at me, I'll... Come in. Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Molly. Where's your 50% of common stock?
Well, he just went upstairs to get a book, Doctor, about the West. We're spending the summer on a ranch, you know.
And he told me you were, but he's such a prevaricator. He can look you straight in the eye and tell the most gosh-awful whoppers.
Well, I'm trying to cure him of that, Doctor. Whenever he goes too far, I give him a little kick in the shins and he comes back to earth.
Let me help you. I can kick harder than you can.
No, I think just a gentle reminder. Oh, McGee, here's a friend of yours.
Hi, Errol Smith.
Hello, Rumpelstiltskin. What's this I hear about you and Molly taking the covered wagon trail?
You better take the doctor along, McGee, in case you get a case of bucking bronchitis.
Yeah, he'd make a big hit out west there. He'd charge him $600 for picking cactus needles out of wherever they've been sticking into. And nobody ever walks into them forward.
Very amusing, McGee. Your beauty and charm are only exceeded by your wit and humor, all of which could fit comfortably into a 5-grain capsule.
Did you find the book, dearie?
No, I guess I took it back to the library. Hey, where are you going on your vacation, Doc?
Are you kidding? I'll be lucky if I get a chance to read Terry and the Pirates this summer. What do you know about ranch life, McGee? I doubt if you know a spade bit from a whiffle tree.
Listen to the ignoramus, Molly. Any child knows there ain't a whiffle tree growing west of the Mississippi.
See what I mean, Molly?
Well, he'll learn, Doctor, and I'm sorry you won't be able to get away. You'll at least be able to get in a few games of golf, though, I hope.
Golf? He can't play golf, Molly.
Why can't I, you noisy little nuisance?
Because if you get close enough to the ball to hit it, you can't see it. And if you stand back where you can see it, you can't reach it.
Why, you little... Oh, say, McGee.
Huh?
Look, in case I get a chance to run out to Dugan's Lake for a morning's fishing, how about my buying that old rowboat of yours?
Why, that boat is no good for...
No good for simple fishing, Doc. Why, that's a pleasure cruiser. Practically. Too good a boat to fish from. Get it all scratched up.
Maybe we're not talking about the same boat, Skippy. I mean that evil-smelling pile of driftwood you call a skiff that you've almost drowned both of us with on numerous occasions.
Oh, he wouldn't sell you that boat, Doctor, because it's absolutely...
Now, wait a minute, Molly. To a good friend like Doc here, I might sell it. If I could borrow it back sometimes. How much you give me for it?
How much you want for it?
How much you give me?
How much you want?
Well, let me see. It's a wonderful boat. Beautifully broke in.
In 12 places.
Oh. I mean, it's easy to handle. You can use the oars from any place in the boat. On account of the oar locks are busted, and you don't have to sit in any particular spot.
Spare me the gruesome details. How much?
Well, let me see. You being an old friend of the...
No, no, no. Give me a stranger's price. How about $5?
$5? Why, that's an insult, Doc Gamble. That boat is worth at least 75... Ouch! 75 cents.
Sold. Here's a dollar. Keep the change. Have a nice summer, and I'll see you in October. Goodbye.
My gosh, my. Gee whiz, Molly, aside from spoiling a good sale, did you have to kick me so hard? I wasn't exaggerating so
much. Why, McGee, I didn't kick you. I was 10 feet away from you.
What? You mean Doc kicked me? Why, that dirty double-dealing chiseler knew our arrangement. Why, of all the nasty conniving double... Folks, this is where we say so long for a couple of months. So until next October, when we'll be back with the most stupendous, colossal... Ouch! Coats of tan you ever saw. We'll say goodnight.
Good night, all.
The character of Mr. Wellington heard on this program was played by Ransom Sherman. This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax for Home and Industry, inviting you to listen in again next Tuesday night when you will hear Words at War, based on H.E. Bates' book, Fair Stood the Wind for Fans. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From June of 1944, it's been Fibber McGee and Molly in Getting Ready for the Cattle Ranch. In a moment, it's Homespun Adventure with San Francisco's own Sam Spade Detective as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective was first heard on ABC in July of 1946 as a Friday evening summer series. The program clicked at once and went into the fall lineup on CBS in September of that year. From then until 1949, Sam Spade was a Sunday night thriller for Wild Root Cream Oil, starring Howard Duff in the title role. With Duff's departure, though, NBC took the series, leaving it on Sundays for Wild Root and starring Stephen Dunn as Spade. This version continued until 1951, the last year running as a Friday sustainer. Spade's appearance on the air marked the most unusual literal translation from Dashiell Hammett's 1930 crime classic, The Maltese Falcon. Spade was a San Francisco detective, one of the most distinctive of the hard-boiled schools. His jump to radio was wrought by William Spear, who had already carved out a reputation as a master of mystery in his direction of another highly rated CBS thriller, Suspense. Effie, who always seemed on the verge of tears whenever Sam became involved, as he did weekly with a curvy client, was beautifully played by Lorraine Tuttle. Lud Gluskin directed the music, and Dick Joy announced. The program continued in its original format through the episode of September 1950. Then Howard Duff quit for a fling at the movies, and Sam Spade languished for some 2 months. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, and Howard Duff starring in The Adam Fig Caper, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Oh, Sam, I got it.
Got what, my pet?
A bank book, Sam.
Well, you must advertise in the Lost and Found right away, Effie, and find the owner. Might be sickness in the family.
Oh, but it's your bank book, Sam.
What?
Uh-huh, it has your name on it. Samuel Spade, account number 4.
It's a forgery. Somebody's trying to pin something on me. Lock it up and don't touch it until I get there.
Oh, all right. Did you make a lot of money on this one, too?
Got the check right in my pocket, $500.
Oh, Sam, we're making more money than a movie star.
Well, almost.
And all honestly, too. $600 last week and $500 this week.
Yeah, how about that? Life gives a 3-page spread to I Spy Molten. But we mustn't let it turn our heads, Effie.
No.
We gotta stay in there pitching. I'll be right down to pitch my report on the Adam Fig Caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade.
Well, we gotta watch these expenses, Effie. You know, there's always something.
Yes, but this will be saving. It saves confusion and saves fretting.
Mm-hmm. Now, this gadget here, what is it?
It's a Minirobot.
A what a butt?
It's for busy men like yourself, Sam, so you don't have to burden your mind with petty details. You see, it has this dial on it, right here. And you drop these little cards in this slot.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about that. That's for me to take care of.
Oh, good.
Then, when you come into the office, and supposing you have an appointment with Mr. Jones at 2:00, and you forgot about it. You just dial 2:00, and the little card pops out. And it says Mr. Jones on it.
How do I remember to dial 2:00?
Oh. Well, maybe it's in the instruction book. But anyway, now go ahead, Sam, please. The card's right in there. Now, dial 2:00. Go on, Sam. Well,
let's see.
It's like a telephone, Sam.
Now what do I do?
Well, give it time, Sam. It's thinking.
Must have forgotten. Jones. Mr. Jones.
Ooh.
Ooh. Effie, you think it's dead?
Sam, I don't understand it. It was working perfectly. Well, I'll take it straight back first thing in the morning.
You'll have to. It'll never find the way itself. You got your book, sweetheart?
Yes, Sam. I don't understand. It was working perfectly.
Well, that's all right, honey. It doesn't matter. Date, October 5, 1947, to Hillary Exxon, Esquire, from Samuel Spade, license number 137596.
Oh,
honey, it's only a memo robot. Subject, the Adam Fig Caper. Dear Mr. Exxon, October 2nd in San Francisco was one of those days that you see blown off the calendar by a gust of wind in the movies to denote that time is passing. It was a day for scraping off the minutes with a fingernail file and wondering whether the display ad I'd paid for in the classified section of the phone book wasn't just a waste of money. It certainly wasn't the day I'd expect a leprechaun to walk into my office. He said his name was Adam Fig. He said he was the butler at Exxon Manor in Los Nidos.
The limousine, Mr. Spade, is waiting to take you away. We mustn't keep them waiting, must we?
Of course we mustn't. Who mustn't we?
Why, Mr. Hillary, of course, sir.
Oh, Mr. Hillary.
And old Mr. Exxon. Mm. The old gentleman is very ill.
Dr. Feige's office is down the hall. Turn to your right, second door.
Well, I assure you, sir, that Mr. Exxon is the best of medical care. Your duty will be simple, to prevent his death.
Do I donate blood or just frighten away the evil spirits?
Oh, it isn't quite that, sir. Someone is trying to kill Mr. Exxon. He's a very sick man, and I'm sure he'd prefer dying from natural causes.
Uh-huh. I get $25 a day in expenses.
Here is an ample amount in advance. But you should know, sir, that the old man is a nasty, cantankerous, villainous, crooked, infidel.
$500? Please, Fig, you're talking about the man I love. Los Nidos was at least an overnight caper, so on my way out, my lovely and charming secretary, Miss Perrine, handed me a brown paper bag which contained A, one pair of socks, darned, B, one shirt, ironed, and C, the apple which she always polishes for me the night before. We arrived at your large southern-style mansion 2 hours later. Fig!
Where the devil have you been?
In the city, sir.
I can't find the keys to the liquor closet. Where are all the maids? What happened to that cook we hired yesterday? Who is this man and why is he wearing that necktie?
This is Mr. Spade, sir, the detective.
Oh, I'm Hillary Exxon. Come in, please. Go on upstairs, Fig. See what that girl is doing to my father. I don't believe she's a nurse at all.
Very good, sir.
In here, Mr. Spade. Pardon the condition of the house. The old man has been firing the servants again.
Your father, you mean?
Yes. Every time he gets shot at, he fires all the servants.
He gets shot at pretty often?
About once a year, in the fall. Mm-hmm.
You always hire a detective?
No. Oh, dear.
I'm not keeping you up, am I?
No, excuse me, please. It's much worse this time. I can't get any sleep. Guns going off in the middle of the night. The whole household disturbed.
When and where was he last shot at?
Yesterday morning at about 1:30. I dug the bullet out of the woodwork myself, a .38 caliber, embedded in the door frame that leads to Miss Caywood's room. That's his nurse.
Was she with him at the time?
No. No, Dad sleeps like a baby, full of sedatives. She sees to that.
Shot come from outside?
Yes, but we found nobody on the grounds. No traces of anybody. I don't know whether Dad knows who shot at him or not. He's such a closed-mouthed old devil.
You don't care very much for your father, do you?
To be frank, Mr. Spade, if hating weren't such an effort, I would despise him. He is without a doubt... Well, listen. There, that's just a sample. Well, come on, let's see what's eating him now.
All right, now get out!
Don't talk to me like that, I tell you, I won't stand for it.
Well, you don't have to stand for it. Take that silly painted face out of my sight.
Don't you dare to...
Get out!
I'm quitting, Mr. Exxon. I can't stand another minute. Yelling, screaming, throwing things at
you. You must have done something to set him off.
But I didn't, I tell you, I didn't.
This is Mr. Spade, Miss Caywood.
Oh, a detective.
Will it make you happier to know that I'm a private detective, Miss Caywood?
Well, Mr. Spade, I only hope you can prevent a murder. If there's any way at all that I can help, I...
Thanks, I'll see you downstairs after I've talked to the old man.
You'd better go in alone, Spade. Oh, Miss Caywood, do you have a throat spray downstairs? I seem to be congested.
Oh, go away! Well, wasting ammunition. Who are you? If you're a total stranger, come on in. Well, don't be afraid, son. Come on over where I can look at you. It's hard to keep my eyes open. Oh, I mustn't do that. Oh, so you're the detective, eh?
That's right, Pop. If you want to take a little nap or something, I'll come back later.
What did I say just now? Come back later? No. There's no reason for you to come back later. I'll say everything I have to say right now. The shot woke me. I didn't see anything. I don't know anything. I've got a million enemies. I can't remember the names of any of them.
Why don't you try to remember? I could have them checked.
You're wasting your time, Sonny. In my day, I've wiped out 100 men, and I'll outlive anybody who's gunning for me now.
You must be proud of your past, huh?
Proud? Sonny, a past like mine is the finest thing an old man can have. I've swindled my partners and betrayed my friends. I've turned state's evidence just to see my associate get sent up for 20 years. And they say my wife died under peculiar circumstances, and I got rich off her insurance. Now I'm done talking. Do me a favor, son, please. I've got to get a half hour, 20 minutes sleep alone. You'll keep them out, everybody. Please, will you? Please.
Sure, Pop. Go ahead. Go on, sleep.
Oh, thank you. That's it.
He closed his eyes, rolled over, and fell into a heavy sleep. I stood there a moment, looking down at the frail, wasted old body. Then I cased the room. In digging the bullet out of the door, Hillary had done a good job of ruining any chance there might have been of proving the direction it had come from. I strolled out on the balcony. It was a pretty night. I lit a cigarette and took it in. And I heard the door open and close softly behind me. Nurse Kay was at your father's bedside. She was filling a hypodermic from a small vial of bluish liquid. He didn't awaken when she jabbed it into his arm. Then she saw me standing in the doorway. She hastily dropped the medicine vial into her uniform pocket and came around the bed to meet me.
Oh, Mr. Spade, oh, thank heaven. Why, when I saw you standing there in the half night, I thought you might be...
Thought I was who?
Why, the man who fired the shot.
It was a man?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see it happen. I just assumed that...
You shouldn't have done it. I warned you. Eleanor.
Oh, we're disturbing him. Let's talk outside.
Okay.
Oh, it's good to breathe something besides sick room air.
I thought you got used to things like that in your profession.
Why are you so unfriendly, Mr. Spade? Nurses are human, aren't detectives?
Try me, sweetheart.
I know what you're thinking of me. But after a week in this horrible house, that poor man, he's frightened. He's really frightened.
What of?
Why, the shots.
.38 caliber or hypodermic?
Surely you don't think that I... He's supposed to be under sedatives. The doctor's orders...
Sorry, sweetheart. It's my job to suspect everybody.
Can't you forget your job, even for a moment?
Sure. If you don't mind the fact that I know you're a liar, that I'd make book you didn't come here primarily as a nurse, and what's worse, your act's not even convincing.
Oh. Is it that bad, Sam?
Yeah. Almost bad enough to be good. Come here.
Oh, I hate you.
It was a very satisfactory love scene for both of us. For reasons of her own, Barbara wanted to keep me out of that sick room for a while, and she did. For reasons of my own, I wanted to get that medicine vial out of her uniform pocket, and I did. Then, as suddenly as we had fallen into love, we fell out again. After she'd gone to her room, I went back to my sentry duty around the house. Under a light on the front veranda, I examined the bottle from which Barbara had taken the injection for your father. It was labeled sodium phenytoin and had been dispensed by a firm called Ibis Chemicals Limited in Cairo, Egypt. The scream filled the house, high and frenzied. I started running toward Barbara Kaywood's room. I slammed the terrace door open and found the light switch. Barbara was sitting upright on the center of a bed. Her face jerked up so abruptly that it seemed her neck had snapped. She clutched both hands to her chest and fell face down among the bedclothes, staining them with her blood. I don't know whether I went through, over, or around the screen that stood between her room and the old man's. I circled Exxon's bed. He lay on the floor on his side facing the window. I went outside. A .38 automatic lay on the ground a few yards away from the building. I put that into my pocket and listened. No shadows moving, nothing. Then he was on me before I could be sure he wasn't a medium-sized tree.
Break your back, be the light.
The warm stuff on my cheek might have been the thing's blood or mine. It gathered me up and bent me back and tore at my throat. Then I remembered that hands are stronger than fingers. I started with his thumbs. He lay there for a moment, then his huge body began to twitch. He was holding his fingers and sobbing like a baby. I pulled him up to his feet, poked him in the back with the flat of my hand. I followed him through an opening in the hedges and down a long, pitch-dark lane toward the lights of a squat brick house set on the top of a slight rise. As we approached it, the door opened and light streamed out onto the porch. The tall man framed in the doorway was the last person in the world I expected to see.
Ah, Marcus, you brought him.
Oh, master, very delightful service, but have much pain in
fingers. Always complaining, Marcus. Welcome, Mr. Spade. Come in, my dear fellow. Come in. I've been expecting you.
Tell me fortune by blackmailing me.
And if you don't, Romet, Exxon could have you booked for forgery, blackmail, definition of character.
Oh, my dear fellow, please. This is most painful. But if I had but the original letter, I could destroy it and go back to the felt. Ah, the felt.
What happened to it?
That fig, that stinker stole it. He burgled my home.
Are you taking pot shots at old Exxon?
Well, don't be a fool, man. I want Exxon to stay alive. I must find out some part of his life which will have an exchange value that will cancel out what he has on me. By the way, old thing, you met Miss Kaywood.
Mm-hmm.
At the present moment, she's milking me for $150 a day.
Oh?
She's supposed to goad the old man by whatever means necessary into talking about his past. That information she is to bring to me.
Well, that ought to be easy. Exxon brags about his past.
Now, so far, I've learned that Hillary Exxon stole two heifers at a livestock show in Abilene in 1906.
I feel for you, Captain. That wouldn't get much on the current market, would it?
My dear fellow, I've a proposition to make to you. Should you ferret out anything that would be of value to me, I'll reward you handsomely.
Well, maybe something can be arranged, Captain.
Good, excellent. May I have your word on that?
Well, there isn't much time, Captain. I'd better trot on back.
I'll show you to the door, sir. And let me warn you, Mr. Spade, for your own good, should you ever hear the thrum of Ibis wings, run. Flee.
I assured him that I would heed his warning, bade him good night, and started back down the lane in the direction of Axon Manor. Business was going on as usual. There were no shots this time, only the scream. When I got to Barbara's room, you and Adam were standing at the bedside trying to quiet her down.
Well, Mr. Spade, is this the way you guard the house against intruders? Where have you been?
Ask Adam.
What does he mean by that fig?
I'm sure I don't know, sir. I've not left the house.
What happened here?
Oh, she woke up screaming. She said someone had come into the room and torn off her bandages. A nightmare, of course.
Please, I want to talk to Mr. Spade alone. Oh, please go. Adam, you go too. Please, Hillary, you go too.
Good. Some questions I want to ask you, sweetheart, alone.
Herbert, look here, Spade, look here. She just had a terrific shock. She shouldn't be questioned.
Well, the code of detective transcends that of the medical, Mr. Hillary.
Huh?
Perhaps he should have a few minutes alone with Miss Kaywood.
Oh, very well. I suppose he's no best.
Remember what the doctor said, Miss Barbara. Not too much exertion.
What happened, Barbara?
Well, it could have been a dream. Somebody was standing over me in the darkness and peering down at me. And then he started to rip off my bandages and I screamed. When Fig came into the room and he turned on the lights, he was gone. It could have been a dream, Sam, and I could have been clawing at the bandages myself in my sleep.
But you weren't. It wasn't a dream. I've been talking to Captain Sherry.
And then I thought... Oh, well, how much do you know?
That you've been feeding the old man truth serum to get him to talk in his sleep.
Oh.
How much talking has he done?
Well... Plenty.
How much have you told Sherry?
Well, just as little as possible.
Why?
Because, Sam, if we can keep that old man alive and out of jail long enough to sell what we know to Sherry for what it's really worth, we'd be fools not to do it.
What makes you so sure you'll stay alive long enough to collect, sweetheart?
Well, because you're going to help me, aren't you, Sam?
So I helped her. Not for the reason she thought. I made a lot of noise leaving her room and going to mine. Going back, I didn't wear any shoes. I slipped into a clothes press in her room so quietly that even she didn't hear me. I left the door slightly ajar and waited.
Time passed, and I was stiff from standing still. It happened at about 3 a.m. The crazy, feverish glare of his eyes told me that the threat of the gun in my hands meant nothing to him. I jumped to his side, twisted the knife away from him, picked him up in my arms, and carried him, kicking, clawing, and swearing, back to his bed. He lay there, breathing hard. Then he smiled.
You're a smart one, Sonny. You had me figured out the first time you came in here, didn't you?
Not quite, Mr. Rexon. The gun under your window was the clincher.
That gun? Sure. I had it under my pillow all the time. I got tired of shooting into door frames.
Look, you're dying, Mr. Rexon. There's no use trying to make up stories now.
You're right, Sonny. I knew that nurse would sit up in bed after I fired tonight. And then I let her have it right through the screen.
Why?
You know why well enough. She was doping me up, sneaking in here at night, listening to what I was babbling about.
Maybe you weren't saying anything important, Mr. Eichstein.
I might have, Sonny. I might have. 14 years ago, I killed my wife. I wanted to carry the secret to my grave.
You nearly made it at that.
Spade! What's happened?
Is he dead?
He's dead.
Did he say anything, sir? Did he confess anything?
You must tell me if he said anything.
I didn't hear him say a word.
Oh, well. Yeah, Mr. Spade. Charged with a certain texture, a significant quality.
There's a certain smell, yes.
Ah, an omen. You can inhale it, sir. Journey thou to Nairobi on the felt. Tarry 7 days, then you will collect the fabulous golden skull of Wizami, king of the Bojamas. Aha! Marcus!
Yes, master.
Unhook the hookah. Pack the marmalade. We're off to the felt. Yes.
Just then a flock of birds broke across the horizon, screaming. There must have been thousands of them, but not ibis, Mr. Exxon. Vultures. I suppose if you're going to pay any attention to omens, it's a good thing to know your birds. Period. End of report. Well, Effie,
The memo robot worked after all. I told you it would.
Yeah, it just takes a little time, sweetheart.
Oh, read the card, Sam. See? You'd know you were supposed to see Mr. Jones at 2 o'clock. Isn't it wonderful?
Well, this card doesn't even mention Jones.
Huh? What does it say, Sam?
Well, it says, journey thou to Friskin's drugstore, wager $5 on Ira W. in the third at Belmont Park.
Oh, Sam, it's psychic.
Tarry but a moment.
Yes?
Thou wilt lose $5.
Oh. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too, for quick, good grooming and to relieve dryness between permanents. Mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From the early 1950s, it's been Howard Duff starring in The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, in the Adam Figg Caper. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those exciting days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember. Oh, sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, Sodio, Volio, Dodio, Do.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.